welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. This podcast is brought to you by Attlee. Who are Attlee, here you ask? Well, Attlee, they are supporting the independent, Attlee.com. Their short mission is to bring together discerning fashion consumers and the inventory of the best boutiques and independents across the world. By adopting cutting-edge technology and reaching out to their incredible followers and customer base, they've perfected sales channel solution for their independent partners and the most eclectic choice and range for their customers. Hey, so if you're an independent or you know of one, then visit Attlee.com, Attlee.com, and sign up today. And you're going to hear at the end of this interview, I'm going to ask David what it's like to be in the Attlee portfolio, in their orbit, shall we say. And, you know, he just tells me, look, I don't know what I would do without them. You know, the amount of traffic they brought to my site. So they've been an invaluable asset for David and his brands, and they might be for your brand or a brand that you know. Attlee.com is the place to go to sign up. Now, on this episode, we're going to be speaking to one of Attlee's independent brands, the founder of Unseen Footwear and Roulette Clothing, David Cullen. David Cullen is going to be joining us, and it's a real meaty episode, this. I can't wait to get into it. So before all that, make sure you're checking out our website, man. www.menswearstyle.co.uk. That's where you're going to find all of the articles we post about travel, fashion, I guess not so much travel at the moment, but lots of articles on how to survive the pandemic. And look, you might be the founder of your own brand. You might want to be telling your story, your journey. Then get in touch with us here. It's info@menswearstyle.co.uk. Okay. Here is that interview with founder of Unseen Footwear and Roulette Clothing, David Cullen. Well, it's my great pleasure to get on the phone. David Cullen, founder of Unseen Footwear and menswear boutique Roulette Clothing. How are we doing today, David?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
Brilliant. No, thanks for taking time out of the day. Roulette Clothing and Unseen Footwear, I want to hear all about it. But first, give me a thumbnail sketch of you, please, in your background.
Okay, so, I started menswear boutique Roulette 15 years ago, based in Jersey in the Channel Islands. Prior to that, I had studied fashion up in Glasgow, and I was a buyer for Cruz, and that led me to making some good contacts within the industry, and seeing a slight gap in the market over in Jersey. It's not one of the fashion capitals of the world. We're a little bit behind the times. So it allowed me to kind of scope out what was happening in the UK, and bring a load of new brands to Jersey. We opened first menswear store back in 2005. Then soon after we opened ladies. Then we opened a sneaker store. Quickly found out that I'm not best at women's wear, so I'd leave that to my mother and my sister. And then we opened the kind of big Roulette store 5 years ago, which sits at 1 Queen Street, which spans over 3 floors in there. So kind of runs from the basement floor where we house the sneaker and streetwear brands. The ground floor is kind of what we call lifestyle and denim, and upstairs now house our contemporary brands. So that's what we do at Roulette.
Great. And give me a little bit of information about Jersey. Forgive me, David, I've never been to Jersey. Now, how much competition are you looking at over there? And what was it like opening such a big, ambitious project in Jersey?
Jersey's a strange little place. Normally when I meet people, they say, oh, yeah, my gran used to go to Jersey. there's 100,000 people here. I was born here. It's very cosmopolitan. Everyone says, oh, you must be rich if you live in Jersey. Now, there is an element, or you're a tax dodger. That's not the case for me and my family. My parents came over here from Glasgow in the early 70s and stayed here ever since. Competition-wise, when we first opened, there was some good stores kicking about. And a friend of mine, kind of best friend of mine, we thought we could bring in a lot of brands that weren't present. So there's a few independents that kind of have fallen by the wayside since we first opened. And now, because our store is situated at 1 Queen Street on the High Street, I'd say our main competitors now are the two department stores. USC has came to the island sort of 3-4 years ago with the vision initially that it was going to be a flannels.
What impact has that had directly on you?
USC, you know, we originally done certain brands that crossed over with them. And when they came, we kind of changed our strategy slightly. And looking back now, it was for the better of the business. We slightly raised our game. You know, we wanted to work with brands that wanted to work exclusively with us, didn't want to work with, you know, such a big empire. And I feel that the store at the moment is, from a brand perspective, it's the best position it's been in from day one, really.
Right. And how do you vet the brands on your site and in your store? So the portfolio, you have Edwin on there, you've got Kenzo, North Face. I mean, you've got some great powerhouse names on there.
Yeah. It's always been a very difficult one for me when you're looking on our website, because, you know, certain brands might not sit together and, you know, don't work out as adjacencies. So it's always been very difficult from the digital interface to kind of communicate what we do in store. As I mentioned, there's three completely unique floors in the store. Every floor is, you know, the fit out's been completely different. The music's different. The complete feel's different. So it's always been difficult to communicate what we do in store to what we do online. So unless you visit the store, you kind of understand what we do. I suppose it's pretty similar to other stores in the UK where, you know, there's different fit outs. You know, I'm not comparing us to Dover Street Market, but you go into Dover Street Market, the basement's very difficult to what product you see on the second floor. And, you know, it's trying to just, Jersey's, we only have 100,000 people. It's a smaller demographic that we're hitting. But we tried to kind of widen what we do in there. So any male on the island from the age of 14 up to kind of 60-year-olds, we can kind of hit all age groups. You know, we still have a made-to-measure suit service in there. And we have, okay, you know, accountants and lawyers still, you know, using that service. So it's almost like a mini menswear department store in there, you know. So yeah, it is difficult to communicate what we do. It sometimes does look a little bit jumbled up, but unless you visited the store, it's difficult to get a clear understanding of what we do. But we've tried to show what we do through social media channels now, you know, and give a overview of this each floor through Instagram and Facebook, etc.
Yeah, because it's hard to build an image in your mind of what the brand is effectively from just an e-commerce site, I've found, because you do need to have some kind of personality attached to the brand, as well as having multiple brands under your portfolio. I'm always curious as to know, what's the over or under of brands coming to you and wanting to be on your website, or you having to approach brands and saying, hey, do you want to come and join our party? It looks pretty good over here.
Yeah, that one's always a tough one, because the brands that approach you, you probably don't want. The brands that you do want in the store, you can't get. Yeah. I've always been very frustrated. It's worked on two different levels. You know, we've been lucky that because we're the kind of most contemporary menswear outfit in Jersey, that, you know, the likes of Kenzo, Y3, APC, you know, the kind of newer brands to the business over the past 2 or 3 years have been easier to attract, because we've got the likes of Stone Island and CP. So from that, you know, we haven't got the likes of, you know, a Flannels Around the Corner or a Choice or a John Anthony, or who might be, you know, in different areas in the south or up and down the country. So attracting those brands have been easier. But this, you know, certain other brands I've always found very difficult when they don't know much about Jersey as a place or Roulette as a business, and they only or hasn't they haven't visited the store. It's difficult to get certain brands out there. You know, we have a list every season of our target brands that we want, and at the moment we find it difficult to bring the brands we want on board, or the kind of particular areas of the brands that we want to bring on board. You know, that's been frustrating, because it's not like, you know, the store's in Nottingham, so if there's an office based in London, they can jump on a train and be there in a few hours. Jersey's a little bit different. You've got to fly here. So you know, and generally now it's brands that we have meetings with in Paris or Milan that we want to bring in store. And they always kind of use the excuse, so, you know, we're not opening any more doors in the UK. And it's like, well, effectively, we're not in the UK as such, you know, or mainland Britain. So it's always quite a complicated one with Jersey. It's never straightforward, you know. we don't have VAT over here, so it's always difficult when we're setting up new accounts with brands, and, you know, what's your VAT registration number? And I've got to explain we don't have it.
Right.
You know, some people don't understand that, you know. So, yeah, having a retail store in Jersey is pretty unique. You know, some things you got go against you, and others go against for you. So, you know. But all in all, you know, I'm lucky that we've been here, because we have found it easier to get certain brands, because there isn't stores around the area, because they'd be in the sea if that was the case.
Okay. And what's the deal with postage? I'm just curious, because, I mean, you buy online, you got to tack on postage. Is it any different from what you
Importing goods, we have to spend a little bit more money. And then, yeah, send them to the UK or mainland Europe or further.
Do you swallow those costs?
We have to, yeah. You know, if we wanted to just, you know, deal with the local community here and the 100,000 people that we've got, then it'd be very difficult to, you know, reach the minimums of brands like Kenzo. We've got D Squared coming in for autumn, winter. You know, these kind of more international brands that have higher minimums, it's very difficult to reach those minimums. That's, you know, with the platforms now that we trade online with, it's been easier to hit them, because we reaching a bigger audience online.
Talk to me, David, about Unseen Footwear, please. So this is your own brand that you've started up. How old, and what was the process of this?
Okay, so I've been developing Unseen Footwear now for about 4 years. It kind of started with as a buyer for the store, I couldn't get particular types of products or footwear brands in the store that we wanted. We don't do the mainline brands, and we can't get the sneaker accounts that, you know, we kind of wanted. And I felt that there was a bit of a gap in the market for the type of product to sit with, the type of sneakers to sit with the product that we sell. And as a consumer, you know, I still buy brands that we don't sell in the shop. I was a particular fan of one or two brands that I personally wore. And when I approached them to sell them in store, again, we had this kind of discussion, oh, we're not opening any more stores in the UK. And, you know, it became quite frustrated. So this led me on to kind of start to, you know, do some research into the footwear industry. And like I say, as a consumer, the particular brands that I wore and I liked, I was trying to get for the store, season on season kept on getting more and more expensive. So it kind of outpriced me as a consumer buying these products, because I didn't really believe the price they were charging for the product, you know, justified the construction of these footwear brands, you know.
Yeah.
So I started looking into developing my own footwear brand. So a friend of mine who had a London-based sort of streetwear label, he introduced me to a footwear designer who had good contacts in Portugal. So we began to sample. I gave him my ideas, you know, the kind of aesthetics I wanted of the shoes. And we started kind of developing samples out of Portugal. So it got to a stage where we'd kind of finalized four samples, four different styles, and we had done a sample pack that we were going to then look to start selling. And then when the final samples reached us in London, the uppers were on the wrong soles. Some of the soles came down. It was a bit of a nightmare, and I kind of got quite disheartened by the whole project. You know, I was sort of a year, 18 months down the line. Yeah. Time, effort, and finance had gone into the project by here. So I kind of put the idea on the shelf, so to speak. And then, you know, I kind of thought, well, I'm this deep into the project now. I'm going to keep going. So I started researching different footwear development companies, designers, and I came across a company called Concept Kicks, which is based in London, and their founder, Daniel Bailey, who very well-respected footwear designer, and been in sort of sneaker books, and if you see their Instagram and website, you know, they've consulted for a lot of sports brands and footwear brands. So I met with Daniel, showed him where we'd got to so far as a project, gave him a bit of background about me and why I want to do it, and you know, my experience in the industry, and we started to redesign the original silhouettes that we had sampled in Portugal. So we kind of stripped back the ideas and looked at more timeless styles. He asked me what sneakers growing up as a lad I used to wear. And I feel like, you know, going through, when you do grow up, you know, you go through a period where, you know, you want to dress like a hooligan, or you're into hip hop, or you go through that kind of skater boy age. Mm. Yeah. So we looked at kind of four key styles, and, you know, we made them on CAD, and then I went to Linapelle in Milan to start sourcing fabrics and looking at sole units. And in Milan, he introduced me to our two Italian agents, Vito and Raf. And these were two young guys, and I'm a bit of a people's person. And when I meet someone, I can kind of work out sort of within the first 10 minutes whether I like them or not. And I just got a good feeling about these two boys. They stole the production for the New Guards group. So they've done production for Marcelo Ballon, Palm Angels, Off-White. And they were starting out by their own. And they can do, you know, from design right the way through to the final production. So we started sampling out of Italy. Initially, I was a little bit cautious of Italy. I didn't really want the price point to increase from where I thought I would be within the market. But then when I seen the first set of samples, the quality blew me away. And that was, from that point, I kind of knew these were the guys who I was going to start building a working relationship with and continue this project. So I went to visit them in Italy. They work out of like Civita Nova, La Marca district. Went to visit the area. They showed me the kind of where the Todd's headquarters are. The Caring Group do their production there across Balenciaga, Gucci, Alexander McQueen. One of the Prada footwear factories are there. So I kind of got a really good feeling about the area and the team that we were starting to build. So they then took me to the finishing factory, got introduced to the fourth generation owner of this factory. And I don't know, I just got this sense that this is the team I want to work with. And, you know, we finished the sampling in Italy. And then we decided to do the first production run. So we went direct to consumer, and we launched that in December 18, over two of the styles. And the reaction was great. You know, the finished quality of the production, again, it blew me away. And I thought to myself, right, I am going to put my name to this brand, because this is, for me, from a quality perspective of footwear, you know, it's as good as any of the mainline brands,
David,
out there.
It looks fantastic, mate. They look awesome. I mean, I'm not just saying that. I'm on your website, and sorry to interject, but I just want to kind of give you my two P's worth where I am with your brand. Like you, I'm not really one for logos. I don't have anything logo on my body, even as I sit here. There's certain brands that I even kind of stay away from, even though I like them and respect them. They might just have that tiny little insignia. I'll tell you who's a good one for this: Lacoste. Really like their products, love the history, hate the crocodile. Yeah. And it can be tiny as you like, but it's just that little embellishment on an item of clothing or on a trainer that just makes me go yeah and steers me the other way. Going through a couple of your shoes, and trainers are the worst for this. Trainers are like, let's have everything branded on your train. Let's make sure everybody can see what the logo is, what the brand is a million miles off. And you have got it just on the nails, David. I think these are some of the best trainers that I've seen. But anyway, let me just let you go in. I've kind of gone over the top of you there, but you go for it.
No, we wanted to step away from the kind of logo-driven mania that's out there right now. And I kind of get quite frustrated when a particular shoe becomes the next hype product on the market purely because of a logo, you know. And I think I look deeper into product than that. You know, I love a good, well-designed shoe, and you know, for me it's about the production. It's what goes into the shoe, where the fabrics are from, you know, and how it's put together.
Well, congrats, man. I think you've got a really good solid product, and I don't want to get as crass to talk about money, but I just wanted to drill down. I know what it's like starting up a brand and how much you have to kind of inject personally into it. Are we getting it into the black? Are we starting to see some dividends?
At this particular stage right now, no, we're not in the black. Obviously, what's going on in the world right now. I think if all the retailers that we were supplying were still open, we'd be in a much better position. But it looks like we've been kind of knocked back 8 to 10 weeks. So we'll see how, you know, when the department stores that we're working with, you know, when Selfridges reopens, when Liberty reopens, then, you know, we'll get a better indication of where we're going to be come the end of the season. You know, our end of season date has been pushed back slightly. So, you know, Paris is not happening this season as well. So the way the time frame works of the fashion industry, I think now hopefully is going to make better sense coming out of this. And we're going to get product delivered into stores when we need it. Overall, it's going to be tough trying to work out exactly how the seasons work when we come out of COVID-19. But hopefully it's going to be beneficial for us as a brand and the retailers.
David, talk to me a little bit about the quality and the sustainability element of the trainers. How important is that to you as well?
Yeah, very. One of the main reasons why we wanted to make everything in Italy was to keep our carbon footprint as low as possible. So all the elements of the footwear, soles, laces, the inner soles, the materials, the packaging, is all sourced within a 15-mile radius of the finishing factory, which keeps, like I said, our carbon footprint super low. And moving forward, we've discussed with the Italian agents that for autumn, winter 21, we want to be as close as we can to be fully sustainable in all aspects of the production.
And how have they responded to that? What sort of things do you need to ask them to meet their requirements?
Well, that's their side of the task force. You know, I don't visit. We visit the sole manufacturers and the supplier, the material suppliers. So it's now kind of their task to make sure that we make sure every step of the way is fully sustainable. You know, it's great to be able to visit the finishing factory. You know, I get to see all the guys that work in there. It's a family-run business. You know, everyone's getting, you know, the correct pay. There's no sort of sweatshops as such. And, you know, the Italians have got it very well policed over there in the levels in the factories.
So what part of Italy is it? Do you get to have a nice long weekend when you go out there?
Oh, yeah, I love visiting it. I fly into Ancona, the boys pick me up. They've now got a lab in Fano where they've got machines that can do knitted uppers. You've got a 3D print machine in there, and they're developing 3D showrooms. So, you know, now with Paris and people not knowing what's going on with Fashion Week, you know, we're looking to roll out a 3D studio that when we finish our samples, we can get the product photographed and videoed, and we can invite buyers to come into our 3D showroom and view the new product kind of almost immediately.
Oh, that's so cool. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, like I said, the Italian agents are really on it, and the guys, they know what they're doing. I've got so much trust in the boys over there, you know.
Great stuff. And talk to me a little bit, please, about the wholesale that you had in, that you started in Paris, and getting the product into Selfridges, Liberty, and Seven Store. What were the obstacles that you had to go through to get this off the ground?
Yeah, well, once we'd launched Series One, which I'd done direct consumer and through my own retail at Roulette, the feedback and on the product and the kind of success of the finished product that we had made, I was over the moon with the quality. And this is when I decided, right, this is time now to launch the wholesale part of the business. And for me, you know, we design a product in London, we make it in Italy, but there's just something about Paris and Paris Fashion Week that's a little bit special. So we decided to partner with Polly King, who has international showrooms. They're based in London. They've got a full-time office in New York now, and they take up temporary space in Paris and Copenhagen. So we launched in Paris last June. From Series 1 to Series 2, we kind of rolled out the four styles, and I think we had about 28 samples in total for Paris to launch the brand. So, you know, it looked like a proper collection when we displayed it in the showroom. And for me, the first season, it was more about quality over quantity. You know, I personally didn't want to work with any retailers out of the UK for the first season, just from a logistic point of view and, you know, being able to communicate openly and see the product in the stores. So it was about kind of selecting and being quite, I wouldn't say precious over the brand, but just being sure that we were going to be working with our partners at the first instance, the right partners. And by the end of the week, you know, Liberty showed interest from day one, and we got that over the line. Selfridges was a bit of a surprise in Paris, but we decided to work with the northern stores first in Manchester and Birmingham. And later on the season, we started working with London. And we also worked with Seven Store, which for me is probably one of the best independent stores in the UK right now, from a brand perspective and the look and feel of the store. So to be able to work with these three key partners for the first season, it allowed us to kind of hit three slightly different consumers as well. So yeah, it was a great buzz after Paris to open the doors and work with such great retailers.
And how does one even go about getting into Selfridges? I mean, I imagine they must get so many emails and phone calls with people that have got their own brand and product and go, hey, how about me on Selfridges? So is it easier to start north and work your way down? Is that the process?
Well, I think what Selfridges do, obviously the London store is the biggest store, you know, the highest footfall, the footwear department in Oxford Street is massive, you know, and it is a footwear kind of mecca. You know, you've got every single brand in there. It's difficult to get it in there, you know, fortunately for me, being on the buying circuit for sort of 20 years now, I've been able to meet a lot of good buyers and make contacts. You know, I know a lot of the key personnel within the industry. So lucky enough, it was, I wouldn't say easy to get in front of these guys because they've got busy schedules, but I kind of already had an upper hand from knowing who I needed to speak to before going in blind, as you know, some new brands might do. So because I had the experience from the circuit and being in Paris, I picked out who he wanted to approach, and we managed to get in front of them and get them in the showroom.
David, we spoke at length about some of the brands and how we vet them to get into Rillette Clothing. You're actually underneath another portfolio, another umbrella, which is Atelier. And so take me through the process. What's it like working with these guys?
Yeah, so we started working with Atelier with the Rillette website. Atelier can kind of plug into the back of our stock control system and pull out our product. So we've been working, you know, we work with a number of platforms. Our online operations manager came to me and, you know, suggested we start working with Atelier. I actually at the time hadn't heard about them. Like I say, we do work with four or five platforms. And Atelier so far to this date has surprised me very much in the actual sales that we're making. It's always first or second week on week. So that's when I decided to also work directly with them on Unseen Footwear. And so far, I've been very impressed with the support from the marketing team. They're very productive. And it seems to me like a very good starting working relationship that we've got with them. Been very pleased so far up to this date.
And with some of the boutiques in lockdown, how much of a lifeline is working with an e-commerce site like Atelier?
I mean, I feel like any of the independent retailers just now, if they have been working with these different platforms, they have been great and so supportive through these periods. You know, some of them have discounted their commissions if you are going into discount. And for us now, I couldn't imagine life without the platforms, especially Atelier. You know, our own website does good. It's you know, bringing in local sales at the moment, and obviously overseas. But the platforms are the one, you know, they've got, you know, much, they've got a bigger team. They can create very, very good content. And they've got the, you know, the kind of masters behind the SEO that can get the products out there. I couldn't imagine life without any of the platforms anymore, because yes, you know, our bricks and mortar store is doing great, but now we've got much more of an emphasis on our digital stores and how we work.
I'm curious as well, are you now part of an online community with the other independent boutiques? Is there like a big WhatsApp group where you all kind of message each other?
Well, I'm actually in a buyers group from a lot of the independent stores. And we've been to, there's been a few meetings where we've come together from the different platforms, and it's great because, you know, it's independent retailers, buyers, store owners that are going through the same pain and pleasure as, you know, I do every day, every season. And it's just great to kind of, you know, talk about certain brands that are great to deal with. And
great. It's
very difficult. Yeah, you know, you have a little bit.
It's gossip. It's what guys are doing.
Yeah. Totally.
There's no football on.
No, exactly. I love sitting down with, and that's why, you know, I've taken on the sales of Unseen Footwear. You know, it's been great for me because I get to sit down with the buyers and the store owners and find out what's working for them. You know, so it's kind of it's great for me from both sides because I understand what's working from a shop floor perspective, and also kind of have a bit of a lead on what's going on from a design perspective as well.
Yeah, you got finger on the pulse down there. Well, listen, David, thanks so much for taking time out of the day. It's been a real pleasure talking to you and getting in the weeds with your brands. It's been fascinating learning about it, and best of luck. I hope we can get over this little COVID mountain.
Fingers crossed we'll be out of it very soon.
And come out stronger the other side. Thanks, David.
Okay, all the best, bud.
Take care. David Cullen there. Thank you, David. Unseen Footwear. Wow, you should really check these guys out. And you can do that at atelier.com. Check those out. And also all the other brands that they've got under the umbrella there. So that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for listening. And if you do like what you hear, make sure you hit a review on your smartphone there. And if you want to get in touch, remember, it's info@menswearstyle.co.uk. In the meantime, remember, it's only fashion, people, and you're never fully dressed without a smile.